only delayed in the traffic jam. That's the only reason. We're having a program for today that talks to the issues as we have in front of ourselves. You shall recognize that this program is different from the program that we shall have had earlier on, which we adopted. We'll come to that point when we look into a revised program for us to take a discussion on and possibly adopting. What I shall ask us to do before we get to that stage is to deal with the program itself that is in front of ourselves, which invited the Department of Water and Environment. Which invited, in fact, is actually the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. And the focus being on the subject matter that we are about, that talks to the whole debate that is taking place worldwide on climate change. Without waste of time, as I said, and as I've also indicated, that let us take this discussion through. And then our second item, we take a discussion, a very brief one, on the program itself. And then we look at how best to go forward. Well, we shall also explain about what is it that we're intending to do tomorrow. Part of that also will talk to matters of how best we organize ourselves. We have not been that powerfully organized as a committee. And one of the issues there is a matter that relates to the day-to-day management of our affairs. Okay, Ms. Carter.
Sure, thank you. I just need to say to you that I'm really frustrated here this morning. Just, you know, this is an issue where I feel on climate change, deforestation, that we here to also give our input. And to receive a surprise parcel in the morning to say, we have the department here to brief us on these items. No, really, I think we need a reason. Yes, I agree. Afterwards, we can discuss the rest, you know, the changes to the program. But to come here and say this is what unprepared, I just think that it is not on at all. And then I want to just raise another question. When is it proper for us to discuss household matters? Will we do it today after the meeting, or please, you know, we just really need to discuss household matters.
That's the point I was raising when I was trying to indicate that perhaps when we engage with a program itself, we dwell on those other issues. I hinted by way of saying we haven't been that properly, I use the word powerfully organized. So that would touch on some of those issues. I want us to be open as much as we can.
See, but with respect, it is not going to change anything for today. We are still not prepared. You know, we come here totally unprepared to try and disorganize, to try and also give our input into this meeting this morning. Well, I'm quite frank. I would have loved to have invited Professor Piers Pienaar to be present here today. I've already discussed it with him. I've said to him, please, when the committee is meeting on this, we want you to be present. You know, and now this morning you've got a surprise like this. I appreciate the rest of the program being discussed later on. I accept that there's changes. But first of all, send the documentation out to us on a Friday, where if we are doing our work correctly, we will be busy with constituency work on a Friday, so we do not receive the documentation. If you look at the order papers in the meeting, that was not, it's only yesterday it started appearing. You know, and really, we wanted to give our input into the subject matter.
Mr. Pretoria, your hand to us?
No, not really, Chair, but I can basically support what Mrs. Carter is saying. I find it difficult for us to make long-term planning in the broader program of Parliament, because we serve in more than one committee, some of us. And to hear only by yesterday that this is going to be a meeting this morning on this specific topic, it's awfully difficult. I had a look at the so-called meetings of Parliament, meetings of committees program. Now, we access these things from back from home over the weekend, and over the weekend there was nothing indicating that there's going to be a meeting this morning. It only appeared in today's paper. So yesterday's paper even it wasn't on. So it's very difficult to make longer term plans about our committee's activities if we do it in this sort of haphazard and short-term way. As we said here, we're also not a quorum. We're only 4 or 5 members here. The DA is full, yeah, and COPE is also a full complement. We need to be 1/2 + 1 to have a quorum. So we can't take any decisions, although we probably wouldn't take any decisions, but it's not the way a parliament should operate, and I think we need to address that seriously in our meeting. Thank you, sir.
I do have a set of apologies here. What I want us to do is to not understand all the issues and concerns raised. Also, our committee, without really passing the buck here, because this matter, or rather this communication, was meant to have been circulated last week through our committee section. Because when I asked her this morning, Madia, it turned out that also we even got this information this morning. I'm not too sure whether it is a department that brought it late, or we had it with us yesterday. We got it on this morning. Okay, can we say in principle we'll take this discussion about the household matters when we shall have done with this presentation? This is also more of a briefing session by the department. Granted, even if it's a briefing, you need to make an input. You need to prepare yourself. So that, because it really does not get to be a briefing for sake of briefing. There is a definite goal, so to speak. Briefing leading up to a specific goal, and that goal must be clarified as to exactly what is it, so that we know exactly what is it that we're doing today that is going to impact in tomorrow's processes. And I'll also ask the department also just to outline in its introduction as to the processes going forward, and perhaps even before we get the briefing as part of the introduction, so that we get a sense of understanding of what lies ahead, all of this process. Some of these things are quite, public knowledge, is it welfare. But it also makes so much sense that we officially get to know, so that we also are going to be involved ourselves in this process. Not by way of hearing it from out there or listening to the news and so on. My simple point, members, is that let us allow the department to go through and engage with the briefing. Thereafter, we take our own household matters in discussion. How does that sound? Is that fine?
Sure. I just perhaps in support of Scott's view that we go ahead with the briefing because obviously there might have been expenses involved with people coming from other provinces to do this, and we shouldn't stop that from happening. But that we also keep the door open for perhaps a future briefing by the alternative view of Professor Piantino, for example. As long as we see them that type, it's fine with it.
You wanted to say more? Okay. The apologies that we have comes from Mama Piliso, Mr. Abram, and Mama Piliso Maswani. Paliso and Piliso Maswani. Those are the apologies that we have. Two of them are off sick, and one apology just came in this morning because of other engagements. We shall therefore go ahead and allow the department to introduce itself and then go ahead the briefing. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Sibon Chibeta. I am the Chief Director of Forest Regulation and Oversight from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I'm here with my colleague, Mr. Johan Besser, who is an expert on climate change, and Mr. Mkwanazi, from CEO of CETAM. I must apologize today for our briefing because we did not know the angle that honorable members would like to know more, or the briefing on. However, we brought both the process issue to the meeting, including the technical aspect and what the department in terms of mechanism of ensuring that we have skills in the development to tackle the subject at on the table. We all know that currently for climate change is high on the agenda globally. South Africa has been writing a position paper on the mitigation and adaptation strategy against climate change. There has been a Southern African Development SADC workshop to develop the position, and following this, that was in May, on the 8th of June. Following this, there was ANSEN workshop to try and consolidate Africa position that was in Nairobi, I think in May. Then we are now preparing for Copenhagen, where we will be looking at the at COP15. Let's say South Africa supports RED plus mechanism that only includes.
Sorry, if you could also, you know, as you talk about some of these acronyms, you know, COP15 meaning.
COP15 meaning Conference of the Parties, Conference of the Parties 14 took place in Bern. took place in Bosman in December last year. Then when you talk about rape, which is I'm going to be talking about in Europe, in the presentation that is going to follow from the expert on climate change, he will show all the acronyms. Rape means reduction from emission from deforestation and degradation. The presentation that I'm going to give now is just to highlight the forest cover in SADC, so that we can know the extent of the forest cover in our region, so that when we go to Copenhagen, we can be able to decide whether we are going the red plus, the red, which is a reducing emission of deforestation and degradation, or red plus. Red plus means reducing emission of deforestation and degradation and other land uses. So if you look at it, we are having here Angola in SADC having the most of the forest cover, which is our number one. Then following that, we are having Botswana with 12 million hectares of forest. I must say here that we also have very, very poor quality of information in the region. There has never been any national forest assessment in all the regions. Currently, it's only Tanzania, Zambia, and Mozambique in the region that is currently doing a national forest cover through the help of the Food and Agricultural Organization. South Africa, if you can see, has the least. We are having about 8.9 million hectares, which is only 7.3% of the land cover. This 8.9 million hectares, which is according to FAO definition of forestry, 500,000 hectares of this, or perhaps I would say, if I were to be exact on the point, 492,000 hectares is what we call indigenous forest. That is more than 75% crown cover, if you go according to that. The rest of what is left here of the 8.9 million is mainly what you call woodland. That is between 5 and 10% forest cover. This will be forest mainly on private land. So if you are going to be looking at Kruger National Park and all the reserves, it is forestry that is mainly on protected land. The other, the last one that is here is Swaziland, is only 522,000 hectares. In terms of deforestation, the country with most of which is deforested a lot is Zambia, and then which is 2.7%. Then we have Malawi with 2.4%. And Zimbabwe is 0.7%. South Africa has got only 0.1%. We have to recognize here that also South Africa has not done national forest assessment, but we recognize that we are losing most of our woodlands to agricultural land and residential land. Then uncontrolled wildfire also are a problem, threatening our woodlands, and habitat destruction by elephants. This is mainly in Botswana. I am now going to go on to give this presentation to Mr. Johan Vester, who will now look at the implications of what I have given, the forest cover and the deforestation on climate change, and how we plan to take our position to Copenhagen. Johan?
Thank you, Sabine. Chairman, can I proceed or would the committee? Thanks very much, Chairman. Just making the presentation.
honorable chairperson and members of the committee. I'm a technical person, I'm a technocrat. So I'm going to present to you some information on the interface between climate change and the forestry sector on a technical from a technical angle. I recognize that the audience might not necessarily all be people from the natural sciences background. We might have economists and so on. So I've kept the science very simple. Those of you who are scientific, please bear with me. I try to make it accessible as possible. I've got a couple of slides, but I'm going to try and cover them quite fast and maybe not go into too much detail. If there are any questions about some details, I'll be happy to try and provide more detail about that. The first part is mainly the technical things, which I call here fundamentals, about understanding the basic science in a very simplistic way, and I must emphasize very, very simplistic, really. And then I'll have a few slides on the multilateral negotiations. So first, maybe just the issue of definitions. When we talk as foresters, we use these things, and we accept that people understand what we talk about, but maybe for just to clarify that, let me just talk about these definitions very briefly. We talk about natural forests, meaning those kind of forests that we find in Nyasma and those kind of places. From a national point of view, we talk about less than 500,000 hectares of natural forests in South Africa. Then we talk about woodlands, and many people will use the term savanna as a synonym for that, or bushveld. As my chief director has explained, something from 5% canopy cover, if we work according to our National Forest Act, up to, well, it could be 70 or 75% canopy cover. There's quite a range in terms of canopy or tree density in the savanna. But when you talk about savanna, that's quite a vast component of the forest resource of South Africa. We talk about, once again, very much an issue of how you define and measure these things. But it could be about a third of the country that we're talking about. Depending, as I say, on definitions, it could range between 28 million hectares or 40 million hectares, so quite a big area. And then plantations, I think we all know what we talk about when we talk about plantations. Eucalyptus pine, wattle trees planted and grown in rows and harvested frequently and so on. Those are our plantations. We talk about 1.5 million hectares of resource there in terms of area. How these things relate to climate change relates to their role in the climate in the carbon cycle, and I'm presenting a very simplified version of the carbon cycle here. We have carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we have carbon reservoirs on land or in the ocean, and we have carbon uptake, the green arrow there, through carbon sinks, and then there are carbon emissions from sources. But this is, you will realize, extremely simplified. I'm just going to show us how forestry fits into this picture with quite a couple of slides. Starting first of all with forests as carbon sinks. And those of us who studied biology, even at school, we know about the process of photosynthesis. That's the key thing. Through photosynthesis, the plants take the water that they extract from the ground with nutrients, carbon dioxide, which they take up from the atmosphere, with the input of solar radiation, the energy involved there, is the process that the energy that drives the chemical reaction. It produces biomass, and the biomass is the key thing because that's where the carbon is going. Carbon goes into the biomass, and we have the byproduct of oxygen. So I just want to show us how trees grow in their lifetime. This is quite a useful little piece of knowledge. The useful point there to illustrate is that trees, when they are young, grow fast. When they are older, the growth diminishes. Current annual increment, that's CAI, that shows us sort of on a yearly basis how much accumulation there is in biomass. And in forestry, we use the term mean annual increment, MAI, which looks at the life cycle of a plantation, for example. And it's basically just the averaging out the current annual increment over the lifetime. Very technical point. I think the main message here is that young trees grow fast, older trees grow slower. And then maybe just a slide on carbon accumulation in trees. As they grow, there's an accumulation of biomass.
which does not necessarily diminish, and the important point there, when the tree dies, that carbon is not released to the atmosphere instantly. And this is a technical point when it comes to the negotiations, a very, very technical point. But I think the principle is that when we sit here and we touch the table, we touch carbon. And this carbon comes from a tree that grew a long time ago. But the carbon is still here. It is not in the atmosphere. It's still in a solid form. that's maybe just the point of that. When we look at forests, we have a community of trees, each one growing at its own individual rate. And there's a model for natural forests that suggests that there are various stages through which a forest develops. But the important one is here towards the right-hand side, where it talks about the steady state phase. At that point in time, the amount of carbon or the amount of biomass in that forest is more or less constant over time. There are small fluctuations, really. And we can say biomass, we can take that as a proxy for carbon. When we look at the Niagma forests, just specifically, and I must emphasize that this graph is taken from various sources, and I've tried to blend them together to get an idea of how fast is our natural forest in Niagma growing. And when we talk here, basal area, for example, that's the area of circumference. If you cut the trees, that's the total area. If you add all those stump areas together, that's the basal area in very simple terms. That's a proxy for how much carbon there is, or how much carbon is accumulated. And we see a declining trend, but I must emphasize here that this is not based on good research. It's little bits and pieces that I try to blend together. We actually in the department don't know very well how the Niagara forests are growing. We need to invest in more research there to try and answer this question. I'm making that point just to emphasize the need for research and for better information. The next slide here looks at plantations. And in this particular case, I've selected Pinus plantation, Pinus patula, and it compares three things. The curve at the bottom is pine grow for saw timber on poor sites where the productivity is fairly low. The one in the middle is for pine saw timber grown on a good site. The important difference between the two is we see that the one is higher than the other one. In other words, there's more biomass accumulated on the good site than on the poor site. And it grows faster. And that's common knowledge. Nothing rocket science about that. The curve on top is for pine grown for pulpwood on a good site. So one can compare the pink and the orange. It's a similar kind of site. The difference is that the saw timber is not harvested, it's thinned out at different stages. That is the serrations that one actually see on the curve, those small little peaks. Those are the times when the pine plantations are thinned out. The effect of that is that it's reducing the actual standing amount of biomass on site at that point in time, but it invigorates the plantation. It results in faster growth after the thinning. And one can see that it actually extends the lifetime of productive growth of that plantation. This is very much the same kind of thing, but just looking at Eucalyptus grandis, where we have the blue curve, Eucalyptus grandis grown for saw timber, and the orange at the bottom, Eucalyptus grandis grown for pulpwood. And it's maybe difficult to draw conclusions out of this, but I think the next slide goes into all kinds of... The next one just shows us, and this is very technical, maybe I shouldn't go in much detail. There are two important things. The one is the rate at which the trees or the plantation or the forest accumulates carbon, and the other one is how much carbon is standing on the ground. This one compares carbon standing on the ground between eucalyptus saw timber and eucalyptus pulpwood. And one can see that it changes because of the harvesting cycles. Taken over a 50-year period, it tells us that if you're on the same site, choose to grow eucalyptus saw timber as an alternative to pulpwood, you will gain a small margin of more carbon accumulation over that time. It's very different for pine, and it's very technical. Maybe we need not dwell on the details of that. I think this is a more important and useful slide. It compares various types of forests as carbon sinks and how much carbon they take out of the atmosphere in a given year. Pine plantations there, we see about 1.8 tons carbon per hectare per year. Eucalyptus plantations, about 6.5 tons of carbon. The natural forest in Nyasa, about 0.5 ton in a year. Tropical rainforests, like in the Amazon, almost just a little bit more than 0.5 ton per year. These are mature forests, so they have reached that steady state. If we look at the savannah, like in the Nailsley area, we see a carbon accumulation of about almost 4 tons carbon per hectare per year. If we look at the forest, like the Siberian forest or the Canadian forest, the northern temperate forest, we see something less than 1 ton per year. And if we look at grasslands, we see they come close to about 1.9, well, close to 2 tons carbon per year. So grasslands actually accumulate quite a lot of carbon in a short space of time, but they cycle the carbon very quickly because grasslands just burn like almost every year or second year, and then the carbon is released. This is just linking us back, reminding us that we have this cycle. We've talked about the green part now. We are talking about the black now next. We don't need to repeat that. When we have a forest, the carbon in that forest is actually contained in various components of the forest structure. We have carbon in the leaves, and we know that leaves are soft tissues. They decompose very easily, very quickly. So it's carbon of a very temporary nature. There's branch wood, there's stem wood, carbon in the roots, there's the forest litter, the soil and the vegetation that grows on the ground. I think the very important thing to mention here is that in the stem of plantation trees, I'm emphasizing plantation trees here because it might be different for natural forests and savanna, but the stem wood of plantation trees contains about 70% of the above ground biomass, which we can say is about 70% then of the above ground carbon of that system. And that carbon is temporary in nature. It is released. I've got a little red mushroom there that decomposes. They decompose the wood and the other tissues. So that's how carbon is released. And the other one is through combustion. When biomass burns, of course, that carbon is released back to the atmosphere. This is a very, not a very user-friendly slide. I think I've mentioned already the 70% that is contained in the wood, so I'm just going to skip over that one. If we look at our different resources in South Africa, then we see that pine plantations at the age of 35 years, and these are very average kind of figures, contains about 88 tons of carbon per hectare. Now we are talking about storage, not the rate at which the carbon is taken out of the atmosphere, just how much carbon is on the site. Eucalyptus plantations, a little bit more, about 97 tons per hectare, and that's at age 25 years. If we look at our natural forest, like the Nyasa forest again, as an example, we have 99 tons per hectare. So the natural forests are very good carbon stock, but they are not a very good carbon sink because they grow very slowly. Tropical rainforest, again, something like the Amazon forest, 120 to 200, we see there's a lot of carbon in the tropical forest. Dry savanna, like Nailsley, there are different estimates here. One says 11.3 tons, the other one says 25 tons. If we just think about the bushveld or the savanna, we know that there's a whole lot of variation, the density, the number of trees that you find in a given area, the height of the trees. So there's a lot of variation in the savanna. It's very difficult to give a specific figure. There's a lot of diversity. Grasslands, like Drakensberg grasslands, 6 tons of carbon per hectare. So we see that they are actually very low in the quantity of carbon that they stock. But they're quite good at taking carbon out. The grasslands, they cycle the carbon at a very short rotation. You will recall that slide that I had earlier on the brown curve that drops off at the end. That's the fate of the carbon that is contained in the woody biomass. And this slide is a very hypothetical slide. It's not based on science and research. It's a very hypothetical slide. I must emphasize that. But I was just thinking about the different things that we do with wood when we harvest it, and what is the fate of that wood and the carbon it contains in terms of its permanence. Firewood, we know that it burns, we take it as soon as it's dry, we burn it, and the carbon returns to the atmosphere. It's got a very short permanence of carbon. Paper, also very short, but if we recycle paper, we can extend its lifetime a little bit. Poles, we produce quite a lot of poles from forestry in South Africa. It has a reasonable life cycle, I would say about 10 years, maybe 15 years. Mining timber, we can consider to be quite a permanent way of putting away carbon. Once it's done underground, nothing is going to change. It's going to remain there, probably, for quite a long time. Our mines in South Africa are about 100 years old, and there's mining timber buried there. We don't know for how long it's going to survive. Another one which is, I think, quite an interesting one is structural timber. When we talk about timber contained in buildings, as building material, in the UK, for example, I know of cases where they have salvaged wood from 800 years old buildings and recycled that wood, use it again. Gives us an idea that the timber, once you use it in construction, it can have quite a long lifetime. But it depends on the quality of the timber, and it depends on how we take care of it to preserve it. The point there is that we can actually use timber as a way of putting away carbon. We think about the plantations, they grow fast, we harvest them, we take that timber and do something of a permanent nature with it. Furniture also can have a very long lifetime. We know that very well. Depends on the quality of furniture again. Let me just emphasize that previous slide was hypothetical. It's not based on research that actually calculated the lifetimes of them. But it is just for us to think about it. I've got some practical things here just to illustrate to us the carbon stock value or the carbon reservoir value of forests. And I have information about Limpopo province. We see the map there, we see the green areas, those are woodlands. We see the orange areas, those are plantations. And the dark green are very, very small. We don't see them very easily, but those are the natural forests in Limpopo. This figure shows us the relative importance of those different resources. We see the plantations there, the top bar, and then the woodlands is the big one. There's a lot of woodlands. It's got a lot of area. But per hectare, the carbon contained is a little bit low compared to the other ones, but it's got the area. And if you multiply the area with the carbon stock per hectare, it gives you quite a big carbon reservoir. The natural forest has got a lot of carbon on a small area, but it's a very small area. So actually it gives us a very small carbon stock. If we look at that province, and certainly also if we look at the country as a whole. And then at the bottom it shows degraded forest land. Now from my own experience on the ground of Limpopo, I know that that's a gross underestimation of what is degraded forest land. There's actually much more than that. And the degraded forest land is an opportunity for us to increase our carbon sink, how we take carbon out of the atmosphere. If we can rehabilitate degraded forest land, there's an opportunity there to sequester carbon. But we know that not on all sites will the growth be equally good. So some areas have got a better potential as carbon sinks. Just another view of the same picture, just to show for Limpopo how big an area. If you look at the graph below, that's the sort of greenish area there, the sort of grey green, that is considered to be non-forest land. But much of that actually should be pink. It's degraded forest land. Alright, we are going to skip this. Just to look at forest now, sources of carbon. And combustion is an important one, decomposition. Let's rather go into the details of this rather than looking at the slide. I have a slide here that looks at Limpopo again and the extent of fires. We can see that on any given year, anything between, let's say, 2% and 5% of the province burns, and that is then carbon that is released into the atmosphere. I know that some scientific people would reckon that is not a big issue, because the carbon that is released from fire this year will be absorbed next year when the plants grow again, especially grasslands and so on. But we see that with grasslands there's a quite frequent turnover of carbon. But this shows us that fire is an issue, but maybe not an issue. The long-term mitigation scenarios project that was done some 2 years ago or so identified this is an area of mitigation potential. If we can extend the cycle at which kelp is burned, there is very real mitigation potential in that. I just want to show these slides. There are two of them here. They show images from the forest fires in Australia that was early this year. And the reason why I want to show these slides is just to show actually the significance of carbon on the terrestrial ecosystem and the potential that this can contribute to global warming and greenhouse gas emissions. If you look at that slide, there's a huge lot of carbon dioxide entering the atmosphere in a very short space of time. In the foreground, you can see some smokestacks from some kind of industry. It's really small in comparison to those smoke plumes in the background from the forest. It gives us a sense of perspective on how important forests and land resources are actually in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, or how important they can be. And the concern in the global, in the international negotiations is about this 2 degrees Celsius. Why is 2 degrees Celsius so important? The concern is that once the global temperature rises above 2 degrees Celsius, the natural environment with all the carbon that is actually sitting in those carbon stocks might become emissions. And it's a natural process that then kicks in. Now, I copied, and I don't know if that ever reached the committee, but there was a newspaper article that I copied in December last year that actually illustrates or discusses this matter and how important it actually is for the global community to contain temperature increase below 2 degrees. Once we go beyond the 2 degrees, it's like a runaway train, because then the natural ecosystem starts releasing more carbon than what it takes out of the atmosphere, and we can't control that anymore. We can only control our industrial and domestic and other kind of direct human emissions. Here again, just one of those images from Australia. It shows us how enormous the emissions from forest fires can be. All right, and the deforestation issue is a major point in the international negotiations. This is the REDD, Reduced Emissions from Deforestation in Developing Countries. Also now included is forest degradation. Why is deforestation a concern? Well, the first problem is that when you take the forest out, you take the carbon sink away. And the second thing is when you take out the forest and that biomass is burned or decomposed, it becomes an emission of carbon dioxide or other greenhouse gases. And then also what happens when you take out the forest is you have decomposition of the organic carbon in the soils. So we lose soil carbon as well. So those are all different reasons why deforestation is an issue. We must ask the question, in South Africa, is deforestation an issue? The answer is yes, it's very much an issue. Here we can see an area in Limpopo again. I'm familiar with that part of the country. We see deforestation for subsistence agriculture. The other one is forest degradation. And we talk about natural forest again here. Taking out one tree at a time, two trees now, another tree in a few months maybe, and so the forest starts to degrade, and eventually you have de facto deforestation if it continues unchecked. Another example of deforestation, this time in the woodlands, in communal lands, you can see the patches of remaining natural woodlands there, probably rocky soils where people could not cultivate. The rest is gone, deforestation. But we also have deforestation in the woodlands on commercial farmland. Here we can see commercial farmland where fields have been cleared, and once the trees are gone and they've been cultivated maybe for a couple of years, it turns out that crop production was not very sustainable and it's just left. And then we also have deforestation associated with urban sprawl, these urban areas that just grows laterally unchecked and encroaches into natural environment. The other slide is about degradation in the woodlands. These slides are from Sekukuni, an area that I'm also very familiar with. In the foreground, you can see two trees that were cut at sort of half a meter height. And more trees are cut, and it's a process. It's a gradual process. It's degradation. Going to the left-hand slide at the bottom, you see a clearing, and then soil erosion starts. And if it really goes very badly, it's like on the right-hand side where you have massive loss of soil associated with the loss of ground cover. This satellite image is northern part of the country again. one can see, I'll have to stand up to show this, but maybe this is my point I can show. Kruger National Park boundary going down on this side. Tanini is about somewhere here, I think. The red areas are plantations and natural forests on the mountainous areas, the escarpment areas of northern Limpopo. These areas that look like clouds are not clouds. Those are centers of woodland degradation. Probably in the center of each of those spots you will find a small little village, and then you have this radial gradient of degradation from the center outwards. That is degradation. It shows us visibly how bad the situation is on the ground. Well, this is basically my conclusion of the technical part. I think the main point that I would like to illustrate by this is that in terms of the natural carbon cycle, trees and forests play a key role. As carbon sinks, the trees grow fast when they are young and they accumulate carbon as long as they are alive, and then they act at the same time as a carbon reservoir where plant biomass accumulates over time in the various carbon pools, the leaves, the branches, the stems, and so on. And that 70% in plantations is 70% of the above ground biomass is contained in the stem wood. So all that timber that we harvest in plantation forestry has got a certain potential as a carbon sink. The question is whether we fully realize the potential that it has. And then ultimately that forests are also sources of carbon released through combustion and decay of forest biomass, and that this can make a substantial natural contribution in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. I think that's a very important point that I would like to emphasize. And then control of deforestation and forest degradation. You see that woodlands cover a very vast area of South Africa. Although the carbon stock is not so high as compared to plantations and natural forests, but because of the vast area, the woodlands actually is South Africa's most important carbon reservoir in forest terms. And then through improved fire control, we can enhance the uptake of carbon dioxide. And then there's substantial potential for rehabilitation and forest restoration, and that this will have multiple co-benefits. I haven't spoken much about that, maybe I should not, because we are running a little bit maybe short of time. The other point was just that forest grain plantations offer an excellent carbon benefit in terms of carbon sink and producing things that we can use. I mean, one can use wood in structural. I didn't say much about that as well, but wood is actually, if we consider all this background, wood is carbon taken out of the atmosphere. But if we compare that to things like steel and concrete and those kind of things, there are huge emissions associated with those materials. So by substituting some of those materials for wood, one can actually gain some further benefit. Those are ideas we have to see in South African conditions, whether those are viable ideas. We know that our wood resources are very small. Now, just maybe a few thoughts about the negotiations. I've got the acronyms there, the REDD, reduce emissions from deforestation and forest degradation in developing countries. Now we talk about REDD plus, then they add, when we talk about REDD plus, red plus, it adds forest conservation, enhanced forest carbon stocks, and such kind of things. It's an elaboration of the concept of red, which has all kinds of implications from a technical point of view. When you want to measure a country's performance, it becomes very, very quite challenging, in fact, to measure some of these things. And it's not only challenging for us in South Africa, internationally it's quite challenging to measure quite reliably what the carbon fluxes can be in forest ecosystems. The other term that is used here, LULUCF, land use change and forestry. There's an associated concept that is coming into negotiations now, which is the agriculture, forestry and land use. And then the other important thing in the negotiations is the CDM, the Clean Development Mechanism under the Kyoto Protocol. Does it provide for forestry? The fact is it does not. It's not very friendly towards forestry. And but it has provision for small-scale afforestation and reforestation as a type of project that can be registered for carbon trading. What I understand, the reason why the CDM is not very friendly towards forestry is that you actually want to create a situation, you don't want to create a situation where the industrial polluters can get away without reducing their emissions. And if you can just trade the carbon for somebody to plant some trees somewhere, it means you can't, you need not to do anything about your emissions, which is not acceptable. The point is that the industrial emitters must actually cut their emissions. And I think what the Kyoto Protocol intended here was not to sort of create a backdoor for them. That is one reason why the CDM is not friendly towards forestry. The disadvantage, of course, is it prevents forestry from gaining benefits out of carbon trading. I think it's a big debate on what is more important there. Main negotiation tracks in the negotiations, and I'm focusing on REDD because that is really the main forestry topic. There's the ad hoc working group on long-term cooperative action. They deal with a lot of things, and their main emphasis is to see what future global deal we can agree on for climate. And how forests fit into that, maybe just for your reference, this is the kind of documentation, the text that is being negotiated. Let's say half of this. That is the text which is negotiated. And REDD is maybe a small component within this couple of pages, deals with REDD. And then there's the ad hoc working group on the Kyoto Protocol. They examined the point that I've just mentioned shortly ago, how the Kyoto Protocol would accommodate forestry and especially deforestation issues. And then maybe the element that I'm most familiar with personally is the subsidiary body on the scientific and technological advice. The negotiations there focus on very technical matters. How do we measure? How do we monitor? How do we actually change things like deforestation behavior and so on? Maybe just something to mention there. We have the first bullet there in Bali 2 years ago at the 13th conference of the parties of the UN Convention on Climate Change. Two important agreements were reached in terms of deforestation there. The one is the inclusion of forest degradation, and the other one was an agreement on pilot projects, but I've got inverted commas there. There was a big issue about semantics, and it was eventually decided to use the term demonstration activities. But the decision there opened the door for parties to engage in demonstration activities, and there would be some benefits in terms of maybe rewards to those countries. Coming up to Copenhagen, the question is then this red plus concept. It was already quite a challenge in Bali to get deforestation added with forest degradation added with deforestation. If we now want to add other things like forest conservation and enhancement of forest carbon stocks and sustainable forest management, can that be agreed? That's a big question. Our position as South Africa, our proposed position is that we support that because it creates more opportunities for carbon sequestration. It also creates more opportunities for benefiting out of a deal on red. There's also, and it's ever-present, debate about definitions. How do we define forests? How do we define degradation? You have to define it in a certain way to be able to measure it. And sustainable forest management, those are some of the issues that needs to be defined and agreed about. MRV is measurable, reportable, and verifiable. It stands for how do we measure and report and verify. If we say we have so much deforestation in South Africa, or in Botswana, or in Zimbabwe, or wherever, how do we measure that? How do we report on that? And how can it be verified? It's a very, very important aspect of the negotiation. And the next one is the reference scenario or the baseline. our chief director has given some figures in the beginning to say that, let's say, I think it was Botswana, was it Zambia, 2.7% deforestation. 2.7% of what? It becomes the question, is it 2.7% of what can be lost, or is it 2.7% of what used to be in the past? Is it a change? Maybe I'm not expressing myself very clearly there, but there's a question here about whether you define or measure deforestation relative to what? Is it the potential size of the forest, or is it relative to your previous trends of deforestation? Those two specifically. The baseline refers to previous trends in deforestation, whereas the reference scenario refers to the total extent of forest measure. And then the other critical part of the rent negotiation is about funding, whether countries will be rewarded through a market mechanism like the CDM, or whether there's going to be a special fund for compensating countries for reduced emissions. The key point there is that countries use their forest, and deforestation is motivated by economic drivers. Very, very strong one is agricultural development. We take out forest to cultivate crops. And if you don't cultivate crops and you keep the forest, it means that actually the economy is maybe losing something, because agriculture might have an advantage, an economic advantage over forestry. So by forfeiting that benefit, how do you compensate countries for that lost benefit? There are some contentious issues. The scope, in other words, what we've already spoken about, do we only talk about deforestation and degradation, or do we add other things, the REDD+, do we add sustainable forest management, do we add agriculture, and those kind of things. The funding and the market mechanism, these are basically the same. Another very important issue is, of course, the issue about, or the question about permanence, about forest carbon stocks. How permanent is it and how can it be guaranteed? And displacement of emissions, which is also referred to as leakage. Maybe we can conserve an area of forest in one part of the country, but conserving it in this part of the country might lead to increased emissions somewhere else. That is a leakage kind of issue. And then the approaches and methodologies is another big area in the reference and the baseline. So, thank you very much. That's what I can say. If there are any questions, I can try to answer. And I'm not an expert. I'm not an expert.
Any
Because we were told that we need to brief the honorable members on what we are doing in terms of skills development. I don't know whether we have time for that.
No, let's confine ourselves to the subject matter we're dealing with. Members, that's the presentation on the impact that deforestation has on climate change, or the other way around, the impact that climate change has on forests and degradation as we speak insofar as South Africa is concerned, and South Africa's views on some of these matters going forward. I thought you were also going to highlight, just in summary, you did indicate to us that we're working towards Copenhagen, which is December Head of State Summit of United Nations, and the subject matter being that. But there's a process also that started in 2002 at Rio, which in 2012. You are undoubtedly going to be expected to do a review going forward. If you could just as in conclusion, round up just about all of those process and how this December speaks to that Kyoto process. Because in one way or another, there must be a connection.
Yes, I will ask
Mr.
to go through it.
Chairperson, there are these different conventions and processes that are under the United Nations, and personally, I'm not actually involved with the forestry focus. I'm more directly linked to the climate change. They do link up in ways. There is the UNFF, United Nations Forum on Forests, and they basically take care of the forestry agreement. That is where the forestry agreement from Rio is sort of advanced. Unfortunately, I'm not involved in the UNFF process, so I can't give you the details. But I know that there are connections, and they try to harmonize at the high level internationally. They try to harmonize those things. For example, I also know that the Food and Agriculture Organization, when it comes to their regular reporting on Forest International, they try to incorporate the demands or requirements for climate change, as well as biodiversity and all these other things. They are somehow. But unfortunately, I can't give you a very clear answer on that. I'm sorry.
No, that's the presentation. And perhaps we should give ourselves some time to interact with the presentation. Dr. Posa?
Thank you very much. I think this is really...
If you would stick to the mic.
Sorry. I think the information that we're getting, obviously, very informative. And I must also disagree that what I said previous, that we didn't really prepare ourselves. I was also at many of these negotiations before involved through the agricultural sector. And obviously, the agricultural sector and what we're representing here is going to be affected, most probably very severely, as far as climate change is concerned. The focus at the moment and this morning is mostly on the forestry situation in the sector, but it actually, you know, incorporates much wider. There's a lot of other issues also involved in climate change. Some of the issues that we would most probably also need some information on is how far are we with the investigation on the current situation of the climate change process, or can I put it it's not really a process, but the indicators of it. What is happening in South Africa? What is happening in the world, and what is the indications of the prospects in future? So that we can just measure where we are at the moment, so that we can see, and I think he's referred to it somewhat in the use of the forestry sector to mitigate the whole situation. The other issues that comes into the role as far as the agricultural sector is involved is obviously emission of gases and animals and all sorts of other issues. But I think one of the aspects that is not really considered is where forestation is taken out or substituted by annual plants. Those plants are also, again, contributing to the zinc process. And I think I wonder if it is taken into account and what is the result of that. Because it's not a fact that, it's a fact that when you take out the forestation and you're using something else, and that is also mitigating. Not mitigating, but it's also a process where this carbon dioxide is taken from the air. So I think we need, and I'm happy for this, but I think we need some more realistic in information on where are we at the moment, what is the research showing us on the climate change indicators, and how far are we down the road. Because I know that for the fact that agriculture, if we go for a 2 degree warming of the environment in South Africa, a vast area of the country will not be usable for agricultural purposes anymore. So it is very important for us to also have that information. Thank you, sir.
Have you got any other ticker? If I were to ask a question, it touched on one area that talks about monitoring rather measurable, reportable, and verifiable. You also made mention of the fact that there must certainly be monitoring to a point where there is appreciation of those countries, developing countries, that are seriously engaged in practicing or rather towards the RED program, to an extent where in part of that appreciation must talk about, because there's going to be a competing issue here with agriculture and forestation, or afforestation or reforestation, whichever. The issue for me there is more about the monitoring part of this whole exercise at a global level, to an extent wherein it is going to be practical for that monitoring mechanism to be able to say to any country A or B or C, you're doing right, here is what is due to you, because you are in keeping. South Africa also, reading the report on Water and Forestry Department, the annual report, there is also mentioning being made about part of the country's land being set aside for reforestation, about 100,000 hectares. Whether or not that will also be a contributory factor towards that RED plus. My main area of interest there relates more with the monitoring aspect. If you were to comment on that one, as part of our own contribution in the country going towards those negotiations. So that is one of the issues there that is raised in those negotiations, I would imagine, because at the end of the day, there must be a structure that monitors whether or not, you know, nations, especially developing countries, are able to live with expectations thereof.
Thank you. Maybe if I can start with the first questions about how are we doing. I think, and maybe I'm not the appropriate person to answer on that, but just from my, rather poorly informed information that I have, we talk about a 2 degrees Celsius increase in temperature above pre-industrial levels, or pre-industrial level temperature. I understand that we are already at 0.7%. So we are left with about 1.3 degrees centigrade leeway before we reach the critical level of 2 degrees. That's global. And we must consider that there's a very long lag time. So the climate change effect that we see now is the result of air pollution from decades ago, maybe a century ago, I don't know. I'm not very well clued up. If I can make a recommendation there, it will be worth the while for the committee to get somebody that really knows the climate science better. I mean, I'm a forester. I don't have that information in detail. So it will be better to get a climate scientist to provide the details of that. And there are some people locally in Cape Town that can actually provide very good information on that. If need be, I can provide some suggestions of names. the question of monitoring, to come to that one, That is really a very, very important thing. I was just reading this negotiation text last night on the flight, and what it sort of moves towards, and much of this is still in brackets, and it's going to be negotiated and have to be agreed, but it moves towards setting targets for countries in terms of these things. But then you absolutely need to be able to monitor and to make sure that there is compliance with whatever is agreed to. But that is a technical challenge. We can use remote sensing to monitor forest cover, but it has its weaknesses. One of the things that was internationally now agreed in a workshop where I happened to be present was that forest degradation is a very difficult thing. It's difficult to define, and even more so difficult to measure. You can't measure it by means of remote sensing, because a satellite image just tells you what's on top of the canopy. It doesn't tell you what's below the canopy, whether there is anything there or not. So it requires on-the-ground measurement, which is extremely laborious and going to be expensive. We are having plans in the forestry branch to develop our information on forests and to monitor and measure them more accurately, but it's quite a challenge. And
okay.
You want to add to
that? Yeah, just to add to what our plans are nationally is that this month we have approached Food and Agricultural Organization because they have expertise on all these issues around the carbon measures and national forest resource assessment techniques, and we think they have developed methodologies that are much more practical and cheaper because it's very expensive to collect information. They will be visiting South Africa this month from 24th to 30th to start the process of actually looking at the whole country and looking at the both forest cover and integrated land use. They will be looking even at agriculture. And once we have done resource accounting and we know exactly how much we have, then we will start doing a carbon measure to know exactly where we are. We are thinking that this process will take about 3 years. Of course, depending on the resources, we will approach other partners to help us assess this. What is at stake at the moment is making sure that we don't miss out on the opportunities on this climate change, particularly around forestry. We touched on the issues of afforestation. We know, of course, that we are a water-scarce country, but we are hoping we will have about, I think, 60,000 hectares from Eastern Cape and 40,000 hectares from KZN, which will make the 100,000 that you talked about. And I think in terms of job creation and creating, coming up with response mechanism against climate change will be very, very helpful. But at the moment, yes, we have a plan in place. We are hoping that we will be able to get resources because they are estimating at over a 5-year period that we may need around $6 million US dollars to be able to do the whole issues around carbon stock measurements and national forest resource assessment. And we think we will start with the Limpopo and we'll do it in phases.
Any further questions? Are we that much satisfied for this very first bite of the briefing? Obviously, the issues here need to be further explored. I think the department is equally very clear with itself that matters that talk directly to climate change, we might also have to engage, you know, some of the experts. Notwithstanding all of that, Mr. Pretorius, so you still wish to explore certain areas?
Thank you. Sorry for my ignorance. I just needed to get Mr. Bessa to explain to me in very layman's terms what the concept of carbon sinks again. That's actually what is carbon sinks. How does it work?
Whilst you begin to do that, also maybe just for our own sake as well, you see there's many of these concepts being used. You're talking about reforestation, you're talking about afforestation. You could also just very briefly just clarify those concepts. Afforestation and reforestation. Get it quite clear. Mama Guru?
Captain, I don't know whether I'm the correct in raising some of these things. You see, Captain, when listening to the chief director, the last speaker, talking about those $1 million that are needed for them to start working, I just wonder if the department, all the departments are working in isolation, whether they are consulting one another's department. Because, Chairperson, truly speaking, around climate change, there are a lot of politics around it. It's about big sisters and big brothers that are there. And for me, to say, if I had her very well, to say we'll be importing scientists from America or wherever, while America is not cooperating as a big sister. America is not cooperating. America is not part of this negotiations. Last week in this very parliament, we had a video conferencing with the British parliament, members of parliament, as a study group of water affairs. There are serious politics, and I think we need to tread carefully. Last week, I attended a public hearing on climate change in Rondebosch, where one scientist indicated that from USA, he visited Limpopo, he had meetings with farmers around Limpopo, who gave him whatever answers they gave him around the clouds. That in Limpopo, when you're in Limpopo, clouds are no longer coming from the south, they are coming around from all angles. And Chairperson, I'll have a very serious problem. For scientists to come into South Africa and not consult our government, just approach our farmers down there. Innocent farmers, innocent people, to get whatever information they will get. To say Department of Environmental Affairs is the big sister that other departments need to work hand in hand because they're in charge of what is taking place. Because there's no negotiations that will go on if America is not complying as the biggest producers of those emissions. And America is saying South Africa should not utilize coal for generating energy. Meanwhile, they're also using coal for generating. So there are politics around this, and I think we need to understand what is this politics around climate change, Mr. Pretorius. We need to be informed about that. Because it's about money, it's about technology that they're talking about, that smaller countries or African countries cannot afford. You contribute the money that they want, all those countries to contribute, and you again go and loan from the big sisters. So we need to be properly briefed, not in piecemeal. The departments need to come together and a great, proper presentation of what is expected in Copenhagen. Because if those who are going to attend that conference don't have the same understanding, we're not going anywhere. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honourable
Members. Let me qualify the issue around Food and Agriculture Organization. It's a technical UN body. We pay membership to FAO, and the benefits that we get from FAO is technical assistance where there is no expertise. They will be just helping us in terms of collecting information. They won't be actually doing their job. They will be capacitating our people to be able to do their job. We will be training them so that in future they should go out there and collect information. At the moment, like we said in our presentation, we do not even know the extent of woodlands that we have in the country. The figures range from 29 million hectares to around 43 million hectares. We talk deforestation. We don't even know at what rate. Now they are coming to train our people, and this is the benefit that we get from paying membership to FAO. It will be just one person coming and helping us looking what we are having and taking us people into the field and training them on how to do things. The issue around climate change will come later when we know exactly how much we have. And we will just want them to know, because even nationally, if you look at our National Forest Act, Chapter 2 wants us to report every 3 years on the state of the forest report. It needs us to report on extent and those trends that are in, not in the national interest. We need to have information for us to be able to come here and inform honorable members on the state of the forest report. We need to build capacity in the country, and it's only through this international organization where we pay membership that we can get benefits from. I am going to allow Mr. Bester to talk to reforestation and deforestation and carbon sinks.
Chairperson, thanks again for the opportunity and for the question. just very, very briefly again, the role of forest as a carbon sink. What we are saying, if we look at the slide there, we have carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We have carbon reservoirs in the ocean and on land. We won't talk about the ocean now, that's not forestry domain. But let's say, for example, carbon on, in land-based ecosystems. And there is that part of the cycle where carbon is taken out of the atmosphere and, well, there's a term that you sequester, it's taken up as organic carbon. And how that process happens is through the process of photosynthesis, where the green plants take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. It's like a breeding process. And they use water and nutrients, and then there's rather complex chemistry, and I haven't dealt with that chemistry for a long time. I won't attempt to go into the details, but there's complex chemistry taking place, which is the chemical reactions are driven by energy from sunlight. The energy that is contained in the sunlight is basically locked up in the organic compounds that form. In simple scientific terms, it basically comes down to the process of plants producing sugars, simple sugars like glucose, which is then through metabolism built into more complex sugars like starches and eventually cellulose and hemicellulose. In this diagram, it represents the brown component. That's the organic material that is produced from carbon dioxide, water, and the nutrients that the plant combines. And that is the fundamental basic process of a carbon sink in green vegetation. It takes the carbon dioxide through photosynthesis, build it into organic material, the most simple of which is glucose, but that is built into more complex organic components such as cellulose, which is an important part of wood, lignin, and cellulose. now the question here is, I've had another point in Mr. Chairman, you can maybe just indicate if I can entertain that. That's more about how forestation then can generate carbon credits or financing from the carbon market. Can I talk to that? It links to this just a little bit more in-depth description. So the biomass that we see that is produced from photosynthesis, that forms the building material of plant bodies. That's where the carbon is. And we see that forests can accumulate quite a lot of carbon. So one can say, yes, then in that case, can't we get paid for the carbon that we remove from the atmosphere? The fact that forests take carbon out of the atmosphere, that is a scientific fact. Whether we can be paid for that, that becomes an economic and political issue. And the mechanism that is created through the Kyoto Protocol whereby carbon can be traded is the Clean Development Mechanism. And the Clean Development Mechanism makes provision for that, but as I previously said, they don't want to give too much space for forestry because they are concerned that maybe if we give forestry too much space, there's a big sink potential in forestry, then countries who are, or industries that are emitting carbon dioxide can get a backdoor out. And instead of cutting their emissions, they can just invest in forestry. Now, the CDM doesn't want to do that. So it has, first of all, created some opportunity for forestry so that there can be gains in the forestry sector by entering into the carbon trade. But they have limited that thing to initially 8 kilotons of carbon per project. So if my project, if my forest that I plant accumulates more than 8 kilotons of carbon, I will only be paid for the 8 kilotons. They don't pay me for the rest. There are huge transaction costs involved in this because we have to monitor, we have to measure first the baseline, then you have to monitor and you have to ensure that there is no leakage and that there is permanence. All of those issues are really complex. And from a transaction point of view, quite expensive to do. So globally, there was no uptake, or very limited uptake in afforestation and reforestation projects. Then in the Bali Conference of the Parties, the COP13, 2 years ago, there was an agreement reached that they will increase that ceiling from 8 kilotons to 16. So there's a bit more scope now, but it's still very, very small. And maybe then just to clarify the definitions, I think you've asked for that as well. Afforestation, there are very technical definitions in the convention about these things, but afforestation basically means that one plants forest on land where there was no forest before. Well, not before, there's a cut-off date or a reference date. If there was no forest on that land for so many years, it's regarded as afforestation, new forestation. And then reforestation basically means that we plant forest where forest used to be before. So if we had deforestation, if we can think about some of these, can I maybe see if I can find my slides? Just to make it practical for us to visualize this. If we take this, for example, those crop fields that were there, that was deforestation. Some point in time, that was deforestation. If we now go and plant trees there again, it is reforestation. But if we go and plant trees in areas where there were no trees before, like in the grasslands or wherever, then we are doing afforestation. I hope that clarifies. Thank you.
Any further questions? Mamalu?
To get this more like a clarity, when listening to one farmer from Platteland who farms on a tea plantation, he indicated that climate change is affecting them because some of the plants are changing color. And I personally experienced it by going to NTK to say to them, my roses are changing color. And what are the causes? Is that because of climate change that some trees are changing color? You go through my cover group, the blue gum tree is no longer trees. Blue gum tree leaves are no longer they are now brown, no longer dark green. Because when we grew up, we used to use blue gum trees as medication for flu and whatever. Are these trees changing color because of climate change? Are these trees now thinning up? Because you go through Matsubakri, we used to have those thick blue gum trees, and they are no longer too thick, they are now thin. Is it because of climate change? What is it all about? Can we be clarified around that? Thank you.
If you could also, just in brief terms, again, a point raised by Ms. Mabuza. Government has to coordinate its inputs in all these processes as we go on with negotiations. I picked up that the environmental department is a lead government agency in this process. To what extent are we able to coordinate all our inputs in one direction at the end? But my understanding is that cabinet took that decision for water and environment to be the lead agency of government. To what extent are we able to pull all of these inputs and ideas towards one particular direction for us to be able to say, when it comes to these matters that we're dealing with here now, our main place of first point of call should be that department, to a point where we should be able to say, perhaps if you want a typical briefing session that we're supposed to have had would have been a briefing session that says the Department of Water and Environment, alongside yourselves, the specific section in forest must be the one that comes here, so that we're able to get a bigger and broader sense of where things are and where things are going.
Chairman, before maybe the another response, can I maybe put on some thunder? Chairperson, again, when one listens to what has been tabled before us, I've just come up with something in my mind. Understand the we are having these alien plants in our country. In what form do they sort of contribute to climate change? Because I understand in some instances some do come up, some people do come with those views that they do contribute somehow to the climate change. That's my question, I think.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I will take the issue around coordination of government departments. I must say we are doing very well in terms of coordination around both information, collecting information, and issues around climate change. Where in terms of climate change, yes, Department of Environmental Affairs is the lead agency. We have a national coordinating committee, and all the relevant departments sit in that committee. When it comes to forestry issues, and we have to go, and I must also say, even SADC, we coordinate at that level, and even at the level of in Africa, where we go to Botswana to coordinate a position paper. We self-coordinate from South Africa all the departments through environmental affairs, and we go and attend a negotiation meeting in SADC. We are the lead of the delegation is environmental affairs, although we come in as technical expert from forestry point of view. And when we go to AMSEN in Nairobi also, environmental affairs still leads, and other technical departments go with them. With also, I think Honourable Member earlier on raised the issue around coordinating and the issue around cost, around information. we also coordinate around that, particularly because getting geographical information images is very expensive. So environmental affairs, agriculture, sometimes even defense, ESCOM, all the national governments come together and even other partners so that we can be able to afford to collect this information. So I must say in that aspect we are coordinating very well. Joanne?
To reply to the question about the leaves changing and trees changing, we haven't actually spoken today about the impacts of climate change. We have spoken about mitigation potential, but the impact of climate change on the forestry sector is another subject that one can actually explore in more detail. And there again, I must say that I'm probably not the best person to talk about that. I don't have first-hand information so much, and I haven't focused so much on that, but I think it will be maybe a topic justified of its own attention and getting a specialist to talk about that. In brief, my answer to the Honourable Member there is that it might well be that the changing of leaf colours could be related to climate change, but nature is very complex, so it's very difficult to say yes or no. But the impact of climate change would affect such things as availability of moisture, and we know that with higher temperatures there's greater evapotranspiration, so more moisture is lost from soils, and it can put plants under moisture stress. There are impacts of greater temperature, which can in itself affect the stress levels in plants. There are impacts on diseases and pests, which can in themselves have impacts on plants again. And the other thing, of course, that is a concern, that's not directly related to the question, though, but it's the impact of climate change on forest fires. So all of those things are sort of, those are impacts that climate change has and that will impact on forests and trees, but the interactions are quite complex, so it's not really possible to just give a direct answer on that. Thanks very much.
Chairman, I think
if we finish with the information, I would just like to make a comment on the forestry sector, if I may.
Maybe we should, just as on that point, we should, in conclusion, if you don't mind, take us into confidence, not because it is confidential. I'm trying to get a sense of understanding myself, seated here. Come December, United Nations Summit of Heads of State on these issues. South Africa would be expected, or I would be expecting, to see the following as part of these negotiations going forward happening. And what are those contentious issues? You did allude to the fact that the scope of RED, the funding, the issues around permanence and displacement of emissions and approaches, could these be the main issues, or are there other do or die issues for the country from where you are seated as the executive? Because you see, these issues here are quite generic issues. They are there set in those negotiations. These are all what countries are expected to discuss and debate and make inputs on. But directly affecting us as a country, what are the do's and the don'ts, or do's or die's?
I think this is where maybe the bulk of my presentation can come in useful in illustrating to us that deforestation, and I'm putting lots of emphasis on deforestation because in the negotiations, I think, for us in South Africa and in general, the forestry issue most important, I think, in the negotiations at this point in time is the whole question of REDD, the red, the deforestation thing. And I think if we consider the background that I gave, deforestation in South Africa is not a very big issue. So we don't have much to gain or lose in terms of deforestation. We have something to gain when they use a wide concept of red plus, because it gives us scope to include maybe tree planting activities, integration of trees with agriculture in agroforestry systems, sustainable forest management. It gives us the opportunity to include all of those things in reporting our progress as a country. Which will be nice for us, and if there is any money coming forward, we might have some benefits in that sense. So I think for South Africa, supporting the Red Plus is probably the strongest issue that there is, where we have most of a stake. In terms of the other things, I think there are some of them rather technical, and if we compare South Africa with a country like Brazil, for example, or India, or the DRC, I think the stakes for them are much more higher than it is for us as South Africa. But we should, in the context of the negotiations, consider that South Africa doesn't go into the negotiations on its own. And forestry is not the only issue that is at stake for us in the negotiations. So deforestation and forestry issues in general, I think, in the negotiation context, is not one of the strongest issues for us to negotiate about. There are other things, and I'm not in a position to talk about those other agenda items that are more important than forestry issues for South Africa. And among the forestry issues, the one that is most important is REDD. And our position in terms of that is basically that we support a wide and a very inclusive concept of REDD. First of all, because of our national circumstances, we consider the fact that what we say that woodlands is the most important forestry source. We want to be inclusive so that we can recognize the benefits that we get from the woodlands. We want to be inclusive so that we can recognize any benefits from agriculture in terms of how carbon is sequestered in agriculture. So a wide concept will be better for us. And also, I think in SADC, that is perceived to be the way to go. The region will also benefit from a wide definition of deforestation. But we recognize, of course, that there are complexities with that. It brings all kinds of other challenges, like measuring and verifying and reporting. Especially, it becomes quite a challenge there if you open the scope too wide. But in principle, I think the REDD plus is the most important position that we as a country would take to the negotiations in Copenhagen.
So just last one from my side. Is South Africa categorized as a developed or a developing? Is there any issue around that? Usually it becomes an issue, especially when it comes to some of these negotiations. How is South Africa regarded or categorized in those negotiations?
I think South Africa is categorized as a developing country together with SADC. And I must say we have already developed a position on Copenhagen, and I don't know whether Honorable Members have already that position paper, and we will send it, I think, tomorrow so that it can be circulated. The other, the banning issue there also on South Africa, it's like we would like to have a Red Plus fund to establish under COP to support capacity building and technology transfer, because that's very critical if we are to succeed.
Okay. I think that concludes the presentation and the question and answer, Q&A. sorry, Dr. Postman, you had an issue you wanted to raise on forests in general?
Yeah, what I wanted to say, Chair, and it ties in with the position and the presentation that was given here today. Mr. Pretorius asked a question. I think the answers came from the department themselves on what is the situation of our forest situation in South Africa and what are the problems around increasing the areas. It's amazing that because of various factors that supply of wood in South Africa is declining. The estimation is that by the year 2020 we would be at a shortage of approximately 6 million tons. If we look further by 2034 we would be at a shortage of nearly 10 million tons of wood. Now the question is, why is this? Are we not doing something wrong in promoting the sector? And that is my question, which we will probably have to address sometime. One of the issues that is indicated here to us is that our obvious areas is that is available forestation is a problem which we will have to maybe have a new look at it and get some information from the department of what is their feeling about it. But the second one is a restrictive regulatory burden that hampers the issue of licenses. This comes up very often in many of our handling of issues. You know, we have got so much red tape in doing things and expanding in different sectors that we are sort of we are hampering our own progress as far as that is concerned. And then another one that is very worrying, and it looks to me, is that if land reform is taking place, the production of those plantations and forestation is not maintained. So what I'm trying to say is we will have to look at issues or precautionary measures to try and stop this. And actually then also on the other hand, get issues in place and principles in place to enhance the production of and the expansion of forestry in South Africa. For us to know what is said here this morning, for the whole climate change issue, it is necessary that we increase it. There's no other option for us to do it. So I just wanted to put it on the table.
Thank you. a clarification on the question.
My friends that are in the forestry industry, they cannot profitably anymore produce forests. One of my friends who's big in forestry is only working 3 days a week at the moment because of the fact that it doesn't help him to take off his forest and renew it. So it is the situation is not viable out there, and I think we must have a look at it. Otherwise, we can talk for days, and it won't make any difference.
Thank you, Mr.
Postman.
We'll take that as a comment.
Is there any other issue, maybe?
The chief director
would like.
Okay, before that, Ms. Mabuza.
It's directed to the two presenters. In one of the meetings, I don't remember the meeting, it was stated that it's a tree that can be planted and assist in dealing with the problem that we are raising now. Can we be maybe informed if, in the true sense of it, are there trees that can be planted that can deal with the problem that we are raising?
Thank you, Musa. Over to one of the presenters.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. I think the essence of the answer is that I think any tree can help, because all trees sequester carbon. But now trees differ in what they provide us, the benefits that they provide us. Not all trees give us the same returns. And to put that in very simple terms, we know that some trees we use for the fruits that we eat. But we can't eat fruits from a pine tree. We use the timber from a pine tree. And so there are various types of trees that give us different types of benefits. Among the trees, and I'm not sure exactly what the specific tree is referred to, but there was some time ago, there was a campaign that promoted the Jatropha tree as a source of biodiesel. And I think in principle one can say yes, it's going to contribute to climate change mitigation, in the sense that the Jatropha tree, while it's growing, it's taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. What is it giving us in return? It's going to give us biodiesel, and we can take the biodiesel to replace diesel from fossil fuels. But there are a whole range of critical questions that one has to examine before you come to the final answer on that. And including amongst those, and I'm referring to the promotion of the Jatropha in particular, is that one has to ask yourself questions on do we have sufficient scientific evidence to inform us on the productive capacity of that tree? Do we know how well that tree is going to grow in South Africa under local conditions, that we can make confident decisions about it? In many cases, I find that people sometimes promote something. They are very eager to promote something, but before they will promote it before there is sufficient scientific evidence to show us. When we look at the forestry sector, the conventional forestry sector based on pines and eucalyptus, it started over 100 years ago, and there was decades of research that was done in commercial forestry to quantify and to measure and to give us good scientific evidence on which tree species grows best where and how much timber they produce in what space of time. And what the quality of the different what quality timber you get from the different tree species. So my answer then, in summary, is that all trees can help us in some way. The question is, do we know exactly how much any specific tree can help, and in what way is it going to help us? So I don't know if that's a sufficient answer, but thanks very much.
I think we have come to the end of our session with the department, and also let us extend a word of appreciation. Of course, we have started a process. We have also indicated the fact that we need to engage further on this issue, especially directly on climate change, and having to bring some of those aspects. I did get a letter from the Committee of Water and Environment, indicating the fact that they're having a public hearing on the 17th and 18th of November. Yeah, that seemingly is going to be the direction and the trend in which we're going to be taking. I was just talking to the health chair of a Safela the other day, wherein he was indicating to me that as Parliament, we are investigating a situation where we're going to be quite robust on these issues, wherein we become more active than it has been the case. I was also listening to the chair of science and technology, Dr. Ngabo, even talking about a need to, on public broadcaster the other day, a need to talk about a national public hearing, not only parliament-based, but societal, you know, broad public hearing on these issues. But those are issues that I'm sure we'll come across as and when time goes. We specifically have an interest here as this committee on the impact that climate change has on forest and also on fisheries and marine in general, and also on agriculture itself. Now, we are directly affected as a committee. As a result, we need to make our own input on these matters. Let's assume that for now, this is the start of a process. As we said earlier on, we will have to engage in the program and see what the program has in store for us in this regard. Thanks, Chief Director, for your time. And as I said, we will be engaging further on these issues. The program permitting. We shall still have some 30 minutes or so to engage on other household matters as we agreed upon. Thank you very much. Maybe we should just take some, you know, fresh 5-10 minutes. Do we have any tea or something? Okay, can we stretch for 5-10 minutes? Maybe better.